on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, exploring the remarkable story of 94-year-old Eddie Fail, born in France, moved to America at age 19, became a naval aviator, and should have been flying with Torpedo Squadron 8 at the Battle of Midway, where that squadron, flying from the deck of the USS Hornet, epitomized selfless sacrifice, flying outdated TBD Devastators in a battle in which the next generation of torpedo bombers, the TBFs, would make their debut. 15 two-man TBD crews went into battle, and 29 of those 30 men made the ultimate sacrifice. Only Ensign George Gay lived to tell the story, which he did very vividly in his book, Sole Survivor. Check it out if you have the time. Commander John C. Waldron and his TBDs were the first planes to spot the Japanese fleet at Midway. They found them quite a ways from where those enemy ships had last been spotted, and Waldron broke radio silence to report the sighting. That was crucial. He led his devastators in an assault that would lay the groundwork for the dive bombers that would come in behind them. And without Torpedo Squadron 8 and that extreme sacrifice, who knows, Midway might not have turned into the pivotal American victory it was in June of 1942. You'll find links to more information on it at hometownheroesradio.com, but we're focusing today on a man who was left behind in Hawaii when the USS Hornet took VT-8 to Midway because of a mishap in a pineapple field. Frenchie Fail and a handful of his buddies were making what they termed a midnight requisition, but they hadn't planned on armed opposition.
Well, to make a long story short, we got a few pineapples and I started cutting a couple of stick of sugar cane, and one of the guys yelled, "Hey, here comes a farmer. I think he's got a gun." You never saw five or six guys scramble over the fence quite as fast as I vaulted over the fence with a knife in my hand and sugar cane in the other. I just stabbed myself in the leg. Oh. Pretty deep. I hit the bone, as a matter of fact. So they put me in the hospital, and the next day the squadron took off and went to the Battle of Midway. A few days later, I'm still in the hospital recovering. George Gay come walking into the room. And of course, I had heard about the Battle of Midway. It was all over the scuttlebutt. So I said, "Gee, George, I'm sorry I missed it." And he said, "Don't be sorry. I'm the only one that's left." That kind of shook me a little.
I could see that.
But as I said before, I think I would have made it back.
How hard was that? Because, you know, we hear that story and we say, boy, all those planes go down. His plane went down. No one knew he survived till he came out of the water after all those hours. But to know that all those men that you had trained with for all that time were not coming back.
That kind of hit hard.
Did that change at all your perspective on the war, the enemy, or what you were doing there?
No, not really. It's like losing a lot of friends that you, it's more than friends, almost like family. I mean, we've been together for 6 months.
I don't want to do our listeners a disservice here. I've heard the story of Midway from people that were there, but maybe a lot of the listeners haven't. When you're flying one of these TBDs, can you explain to us what your job would be in a situation like that where there are Japanese ships that you're attacking? How would you attack those ships?
Well, you would try to get ahead of them, for one thing, and try to get a bow shot. 30-degree angle is about ideal.
So you're diving toward the ship, hoping
no,
that...
No, you're not diving for the ship. You're diving way off the ship. You're trying to get close to the water and drop your torpedo close enough to the ship so that... Not too close, because the torpedo has to arm itself. There's a little prop in front of the thing that uncovers the contact point. So ideally, you're dropping your torpedo 100 feet from the ship.
And how far above the water are you?
20 feet at most.
So you dive down far before you get to the ship. Yeah. You're flying parallel to the water, right, releasing your torpedo, and then hoping that somehow all those guns on those ships don't take you down.
Well, they continue shooting at you.
I mean, I'm sure people listen to that are like, well, that's ridiculous. Of course you're going to get shot down with the speed that those planes were flying. Then not to mention all the aircraft from the enemy, all those Zeros who had more horsepower and could go faster. I mean, it really wasn't a fair fight, was it, at Midway?
Well, it's a fair fight. I mean, you take your chances when you're at war. There's no question about it. Well, let's put it this way. I would rather be a fighter.
And what does that say about those men who died that day, that they carried out that job despite what I'm sure they knew were difficult odds?
They were brave men. All the people that fought the war were brave.
Did it take you a while to get over that?
Yes.
Have you gotten over it yet?
Well, I've gotten over it as much as I don't think about it all the time, but when I think of it, it still catches me.
Mm-hmm. What happened for you from there? Because I'm sure there are all kinds of emotions that you had to deal with in the wake of that, but well, there was the rest of the war for you here.
Well, when I got out of the hospital, I should have mentioned that when we left Norfolk on the Hornet, we left almost half of the squadron, that is, almost half of the pilots behind us to receive the TBF. So we were waiting for the TBF to come in and be assigned to the squadron. So they flew the TBF to Midway directly. And after the Battle of Midway, they participated in the Battle of Midway also. As a matter of fact, Ernest got two Navy crosses. His plane was shot down pretty badly. He brought his plane back to Midway. Swede Larsen was the skipper of the new VT-8, and I joined them when they came into Pearl Harbor. Got assigned to the Saratoga because the Hornet had gotten a little scratches at Midway, shall we say.
That's scratches, huh? In the pictures, they don't look like scratches.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it did better than the Wasp.
That is true. A much better fate, and better than VT-8 at Midway. So the squadron transitioned at that point from the TBD to the TBF Avenger. How big a difference was that?
Oh, that's like night and day. It's like getting out of the truck and going in Alfa Romeo.
You sure it's not a Peugeot or a Citroën?
Alfa Romeo was my dream car at one time.
So did it feel different for you in the cockpit?
Much more comfortable, let's put it this way. It's a bigger engine. It's faster. It's more powerful. It's a better plane, let's face it.
When was the first chance that you had to fly in combat?
I didn't have any combat until we hit Guadalcanal. Torpedo attack, I really did only one, when I hit that cruiser. That was at the Battle of Eastern Solomon.
Uh-huh.
I kind of broke off formation. I didn't have that much confidence in my squadron leader, let's put it that way. There was two cruisers and a lot of destroyer coming up. And he kept flying west, and I decided to go in.
So you broke ranks because you saw this cruiser. They were flying away from it, but you went after it?
Yeah, as it turned out, the way I heard later, the Swede was trying to get west to come out of the sun into the task force. So anyway, I don't dwell on that.
How many other planes were up there with you?
I think 8. Yeah. Let me give you a little background on
it. Yeah.
I wasn't supposed to be on that flight. The pilots were in the radio room. Somebody else was assigned to my plane, and there was bandits coming over. We decided we wanted to get all the planes forward to take our flight in, and they called for taxi pilots. Well, I didn't like anybody to taxi my plane because usually they overload it. To make a long story short, I decided to taxi my plane forward myself. I jumped in the plane, ready to get forward, and they decided to launch us anyway. I didn't have my plotting board with me. I saw my gunner passing by the plane say, "Hey, we're taking off, jump in the plane." He jumped in the plane and found out the plane was already manned by the gunner and the radio man that were supposed to fly the next flight. So I had a stowaway in my plane. I had three guys on my plane beside myself instead of two.
So normally a three-man crew, but you ended up with four for that
yeah.
flight. So then they say, go ahead and take off.
Well, I took off without my plane board. I just followed the leader until we saw the cruiser. But when I saw the rest of the flight going off in one direction, I hit for the ships.
For people to understand, when you say you left without your plotting board, how significant is that?
I mean, I didn't know where I was.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah.
And no way of figuring it out, right?
Well, I had a fair idea where I was, but, you know, I didn't have the position of the ship. I did not prepare for that flight. Let's continue the attack. We went in, got what I think was a hit. My gunner is the one that reported the hit. I mean, as soon as I drove the torpedo, I'm gone. I'm trying.
But he's rear facing, right?
He's rear facing.
So he sees the impact as you're already passing.
He claimed he saw the thing. So we got away from the ship, slow, too slow for me. Got off on the side and got jumped by two Zeros.
So it's your plane, your TBF, and two Zeros.
Two Zeros.
How did that go?
Bad for them.
Your gunners got him?
My gunners got one, for sure. The other one either got hit or decided it ain't worth it. Besides, I dropped my fish. I was no threat to the task force, and decided prudence is the better part of valor.
Looking back on that now, do you feel like you were pretty fortunate to make out the way you did?
I'm very fortunate. I think we did everything right. I had a good gunner. The one thing I keep thinking is, you know, the first reaction, you're looking to zero on your tail is to
turn all over the sky.
I gave him as steady a platform as I could. And obviously did some good because he hit both of them.
That takes some trust. So you're saying instead of bobbing and weaving all over the sky to dodge their bullets, you gave your gunner a steady platform to be accurate shooting them down, and that paid off. And you guys made it safely back to the ship?
No.
Well, before
we shot him, he pretty well messed up my plane. He got the Stinger. The radio man was, I don't know if you're familiar with TBF, he's got a Stinger gun aft. And the guy's on his knees, you know, shooting aft. He's got a 20-millimeter shell exploding right in between his legs. Shot the radio, shot my wing lock, shot one of my gas tank. I'm trying to get away, hit a cloud before he shot the two planes down. And I see the flag on my left wing pop up and the horn start blowing. The TBF wings fall forward and lock.
Right.
My first thought, I don't have my chute on. You never saw a guy get in that chute that's quite as fast.
Which probably isn't all that easy to do, especially when you're moving in a plane that's hard to control and is damaged.
Well, sweet memories. See, when you take off from the carrier, you don't have your chute on in case you go in the water.
Right.
But you're supposed to put the chute on when you gain altitude. Then I was just a taxi pilot.
Because if you have your chute on and you land in the water, it could make you drown.
Yeah.
So you put your chute on.
I put my chute on and just headed south toward the Solomons. I figured there's an island somewhere in there. We saw the island from way back, but I was going to pick me the smallest island possible. I figured the smaller it is, the less chance there's on it. So we landed by this little Nura island, flew over the reef and dropped it right in deep water on the other side, drifted back to the island, and spent a lovely vacation.
About 2 weeks there, huh?
I think it was 10 or 11 days, I forgot. And picking shrapnel out of my tailed gunner, I mean, the guy that's got the 20-millimeter shell between his knees, and he was the only guy that could climb a coconut tree, wouldn't you know?
So you're making light of it, and I'm sure everyone appreciates that. But this is insane. This is life-threatening. This is very severe. You have to crash land this plane. I'm sure that wasn't easy, and I'm sure you hadn't really had practice, right?
Well, it wasn't easy because one of my wheels, when they shut down the plane, they shut one. I had one wheel down, one wheel up, and we couldn't get the other one. I mean, we couldn't get the wheel up. I was a little queasy about that wheel turning me around when it hit, but it went fine. We put the raft out.
What went through your mind in those last few seconds before impact? I mean, were you closing?
Just the fact that I was afraid it would, screw over and then flip.
And that could have killed you.
Well, it's not critical, but it certainly makes it hard to get your life raft out.
Uh-huh. Were you clenching your teeth, closing your eyes, saying a prayer? Were you scared? Well, because most of us will never experience a moment like that.
You're too busy to get scared.
Yeah.
There's a lot of thing going on, and you try to make the best of it.
So you make the impact, and then what?
Then we got in the raft, got the raft back to the island, spent the night under the raft because we didn't know what was in the woods.
And there were four of you? You all four survived?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, talk about being scared. You have no idea who's on this island or who it belongs to.
You're excited. I don't think you're scared. You're so busy. There's a lot going through your mind. What's that to be scared about, You're scared if you see some guy coming out of the wood and pointing your gun at you.
But did that happen? We'll find out when we come back with 94-year-old Navy Cross recipient Eddie Fail. The rest of Hometown Heroes right after this.